come up with great skill from him to wing the Mo Salah. Raheem Sterling, what a finish! What pure class from the Englishman.
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of Premier Talk. I'm your host, Andrew Mello, and alongside me, with as always, is Daniel Barbuto. What's going on, bruv?
I'm good, Andrew. How are you?
Not too bad. We got a busy, jam-packed episode today, so we'll get right into it with the starting lineup. We got the international break recap.
We got the match day five recap.
We're going to break down the Merseyside derby.
We're going to look at our reoccurring VAR segment.
I'm going to end off the episode with Premier League's best moments.
So like you said, a nice busy schedule we got for today. Let's head right into the international break recap. The first match we're going to talk about, international break, is obviously a very big one. You got two heavyweights going at it, England and Belgium. England won the match 2-1. And the main points that are being pulled from this match, we got the two Prem boys, Mason Mount and Marcus Rashford, both youngsters. They both scored in the win for England. And one thing that is really astonishing, really, is that 10 of the 11 starters for England were from the Prem. The only one that wasn't was Kieran Trippier. So it's definitely a great score for England. Our second English match that we looked at was against Denmark. Denmark came out with the victory here, which was definitely a big upset. And the funny part about it is that the ex-Prem player, Christian Eriksen, scored the only goal for Denmark. And the two Prem boys, Reece James and Harry Maguire, both got sent off with red cards. One was really early in the game. Maguire was earlier in the game. And Reece James was a little bit later.
Yeah, England just looked very poor throughout the course of that game. Not as good as they looked in the first match against Belgium. And we'll segue here to Portugal, my home country. Ronaldo featured in both matches that they played. They played it first away against France. They tied that game 0-0. In a heavyweight match there. And then they went against Sweden, and Premier League boys Bernardo Silva and Diogo Jota, they both scored. Jota getting the brace, two goals, and then Bernardo getting one early on in the match. They won that one convincingly 3-0. And then also we saw Premier League boy and your guy from Manchester United, Donny mm-hmm. van de Beek, looked very good in that game against Italy for the Dutch side. And he scored his first ever international goal. So, and just the passion that he had after he scored that goal was just amazing to see. And then drawing that game 1-1.
Mm-hmm. That was, again, like you said, like the Portugal-France game, that was a finalist rematch. And then this Netherlands-Italy game was, again, another heavyweight game that was going at it. So definitely it was a good international break for the kids from the Prem. And hopefully they can continue their form. And obviously there's going to be a couple more international breaks to come, so we'll see how they do there.
We're going to jump into the match day five recap. Saturday, October the 15th, we had a lot of games. Chelsea played against Southampton at home. They tied that one 3-3. Southampton came back late in the game. Chelsea's defense just this year, they haven't been convincing enough for me. You know, as a Chelsea fan, as an admirer of the club, someone that follows them very closely, you would think, you know, with the money that they spent and the players that they brought in, they'd be doing better on at this time, Daniel, at this time of the season. Mm-hmm, but they've been struggling to get results. And, you know, to drop points, 2 points against Southampton is at home too, is, you know, a very bad result. And Frank Lampard needs to figure out things very quickly, or else he's going to be in the hot seat, because you have guys like Thiago Silva that aren't playing. And then you have Christensen and Zuma, and they're not really gelling, even though they've played quite some time. Maybe it's the youth showing a little bit, but you know, they have to fix things, and they have to fix things very quickly if they want to stay in the Premier League race.
Yeah, and no, then I completely agree.
Yeah.
There's even like you're having Werner and Havertz, who are both going and having stunning games, and to still come out with a 3-3 draw against probably a lower tier Southampton is just not something you want to see in Chelsea's perspective.
Yeah, finally, Werner's getting on the score sheet there with two goals. He looked very impressive in that game. Their attack always looks impressive. It just, you know, the problem for Chelsea is the defensive side of the park. And, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see what they do in order to, you know, combat their defensive issues. We'll go next to Manchester City and Arsenal. That was a great game. 1-0 for City. Great win for them. Convincing win. It was an unconventional formation that Guardiola put throughout that game. I think he was almost toying with Arteta, because Arteta loves that three back. And he really countered him very well, and they seemed superior the whole game. It was odd for me to see João Cancelo, the Portuguese international. He's a right back by trade, and he was down the middle of the park, playing center mid alongside Bernardo Silva. So it was very odd to see, but it worked very well with the three back of Ruben Dias, Ake, and Kyle Walker. They're very strong. So just a tactical masterclass from Guardiola. You see how smart he is in terms of putting out an 11 and a formation and tactics that will really leave competitive teams struggling against them. So it was just an overall great job from the coach of Manchester City.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that Guardiola and Arteta, they were almost playing chess. It was kind of funny to see because obviously Arteta being the assistant when he spent his time at City. Arteta and Guardiola, they both know each other very well, so they have a good idea of what they're going to throw out at each other. And it was a chess game. It's basically the only way to say it.
Yeah, Sterling scored the goal in that match. We'll go over to the other side of Manchester, the red side of Manchester, your team. They won against Newcastle 4-1, but they scored all five goals. So what do you have to say about that match there?
I thought it was a good match. Obviously, at the beginning, you got Luke Shaw scoring the own goal early, and like that's a very scary sight, especially as a United fan. But overall, they did play pretty well. Of course, everyone likes to banter Bruno Fernandes. Obviously, he's a fantastic player, but most of his goals do come from penalties, and he actually missed a pen in this one, which was quite weird to see. He's been fantastic from the penalty spot, and he missed a pen, which kept the game at 1-1 instead of making it 2-1. And then United ended up scoring three really late goals, one in the 86th, one in the 90th, and one in the 96th to beat Newcastle 4-1, which was probably deserved. I don't know if 4-1 is deserved, but they definitely deserved to win that game.
Yeah, and United just left it very late. But for me, you know, coming off their poor performances of late, this was a step in the right direction for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side. You know, the team has been struggling to score goals and to be ahead and throughout the course of matches. You know, obviously teams, they hit rough patches, which is normal. All teams do, you know, even the elite clubs. And Man United is one of those elite clubs. But, you know, overall, for a fan like yourself, it's just satisfying to see your club win 4-1 in a convincing fashion, even though they left it for late. Against a difficult Newcastle side. They're not the easiest side to play against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just a step in the right direction for a United side that's been struggling of late.
You know, I like that you said step in the right direction too, because just yesterday, we're just coming off Champions League that had just started, and United played PSG, and they did score again late to beat PSG 2-1, which was a fantastic outcome for them, because PSG, obviously looking last year, they went to Champions League final, and for Manchester United to come out in the first game of the round robin and beat them like that, it's definitely a step in the right direction for not only Champions League, but also to carry that back to the Premier League to try to win some more games.
Yeah, like I was just looking online yesterday through Instagram, and I see all the memes of Rashford and saying that he's the king of Paris, and it's so true, because last two times out, he's been at the Parc des Princes against PSG. He scored the two winning goals, and last year he scored in the 90th against PSG, and this year he scored in the 86th. So you see, you know, they have some great players, Man United, and some promising talents, and you know, to see them progressing, I obviously want to see Man United progress in the right direction. They're a big club, and to see them, you know, have results like that against PSG is massive, and it's just massive to continue that form into the Premier League. So just overall good of them in the last two games, and they just need to keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to move on to Sunday of match day five. There was only four games on this day. There were Sheffield, Fulham. That game ended in a draw, 1-1. Crystal Palace, Brighton, that game also ended in a draw, 1-1. Villa and Leicester, I think Villa is first in the Prem right now, so this might not be considered an upset, but Leicester definitely has a very strong team.
Aston Villa is currently in second place. They have 12 points behind Everton. Everton has 13, but Villa have a game less. They didn't play on the first match day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that game in hand, they can surpass Everton. Yeah.
So, like, this is obviously a fantastic win for Villa. And then the third game was Tottenham versus West Ham. And that was just an absolute shootout. It was 3-3. Yeah. Lanzini scored, could be the goal of the season. I know it's very early on to say this, but that goal from Lanzini in the 94th minute was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, it was an incredible strike. Right-footed strike outside the box, bar down, no chance for the goalkeeper. You know, Lloris could do nothing but just watch. It was just an amazing finish to an intense game overall. Tottenham have to be better. They cannot concede three goals against West Ham. I'm sorry, you cannot. The West Ham's usually a team that fights for relegation, and you know, with the players that Mourinho's brought in and the club that he you know, the players that he has at his disposal, he should be doing much better. You know, but that's the beauty of the Premier League, really. You know, you see a lot of times smaller teams upset the bigger teams, and that's the beauty of the Premier League in that it's so competitive, and you never know who's going to win on any given day. Mm-hmm. So,
and yeah, no, I completely agree.
And just to talk about Villa briefly too against Leicester. You know, Leicester's a great side. We were talking about you gave them as your sleeper team this year, not a sleeper team, but as a dark horse that was going to do some damage. So you obviously, and a lot of people like yourself, they really do respect Leicester and the club that they have and the players that they have, because they have some really talented footballers. Villa have just been, you know, one step ahead of the game this year. No one would have ever thought Villa would, you know, start the way they have. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of continuing this, because I see them finishing, you know, obviously not in the spot for Europe. I think they'll eventually drop out. But they are doing quite some great things. So just want to keep my eye on Villa, because they're in a great run of form right now. And Barkley got the one goal in that game.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you that Villa will probably drop out of the top five to advance into Europe. But like, just the form that they're on right now is absolutely fantastic. And let's be completely honest, if they can keep this form, they might have a chance in staying top five this year. Like, who knows right now with like, there's teams that look good, but they're not playing the greatest right now. And Villa is just a very underestimated team. And a lot of teams are just like, they go into Villa thinking, okay, this should be an easy win. And it's not always the case.
Yeah, they have some decent players. We mentioned last episode, Ollie Watkins. He's been a great run of form. Obviously, the captain, Jack Grealish, you know, wanted by Manchester United and an array of other clubs. They just got some talent there and some sleeper players that, you know, would do well if they were to go to elsewhere. But just together right now, the coach has done a great job, and they're continuing on the great run of form. So just overall great from Villa, and it's exciting times to be a Villa fan right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so we're going to move on to Monday. So we have Wolves beating Leeds 1-0, which is a great game. And then we had just a very quiet game, West Bromwich against Burnley. And that was just a quiet game, 0-0.
Yeah, sorry, I just have to get that. It's my boy Raul that scored, so you know, I have to shout him out. Shout out my boy Raul. Okay, we didn't forget about one of the biggest matches this weekend. You know, we mentioned in our starting lineup, it happened on Saturday, but we wanted to just, you know, give a separate, you know, time to talk about it, because there's a lot to break down in this game in the Merseyside derby between Everton and Liverpool. A lot happened, some very controversial, you know, calls were made, and we're going to break it down here. So the game ended 2-2, 2-2 draw, huge result for Everton. They're playing very well, as they have in weeks prior to leading up to this match. And there was a Van Dijk ACL injury. It's believed to be an ACL injury, his knee. There's reports, I know, that you told me earlier before the episode, 6 to 8 months was the time frame. And Pickford went in very harsh on that challenge. What do you think about, you know, that challenge? And just break down to the listeners what happened and the potential offside call that happened beforehand.
So what had happened, for those of you that weren't watching, was that Van Dijk was called offside on the play, and Pickford went into Van Dijk's knee. Basically, in a typical goalie form, he went down on all fours and like kind of slid into Van Dijk. He did go in very, very hard, and he did not even touch the ball whatsoever. So many fans were wondering, shouldn't that be a penalty? Should it not be? They went to VAR to look, or they did, and they ruled after VAR, like, you know how they show like VAR what they're looking at. They looked and they saw that Van Dijk was offside. So when Van Dijk offside, the rule is that, so Pickford went in harsh, he went into Van Dijk, but Van Dijk was already offside, so they couldn't really grant a penalty to Van Dijk being offside that happened earlier. Do I think that it should have been a penalty? Probably, because of how harsh Pickford went in. Van Dijk obviously comes out with a ACL injury, and it's not looking good for Liverpool's defense right now with Van Dijk.
Yeah, like I know that there was an offside call that was made, but you see, even after games or when the play isn't live, players are still cautioned or given red cards for their actions. So you know, I think it could have been warranted that Pickford deserved the red card, because even though the play wasn't live and there was an offside, he still went in the fashion that he did, and he still did a lot of damage to Van Dijk. And, you know, obviously you don't want to see the top elite players, and any player for that matter, to go down with an injury as scary as that. It's a possibly career-ending injury, depending on the player. You know, a lot of players can't bounce back from an ACL injury. You know, I hope and I think Van Dijk will, just because of the work ethic that he has and the you know, the physical state he's in. And I think he'll come back strong. I don't know how strong he'll come back, but hopefully he does come back because he's an elite center back. And Liverpool will miss him dearly. And just missing him dearly right now, we know he's going to be out for most likely for the rest of the season. Daniel, how do you think Liverpool will fare without their top center back?
I'm hoping for Liverpool's sake that they can sign somebody in January, just because I don't really like the way that they're looking right now with their center backs. They have Joe Gomez, who has proved himself over last year, and he's played pretty well. They have Joel Matip that they also couldn't take off the bench. Those two will probably be their starting center backs. But I really don't like. I think Joe Gomez is pretty good, but I don't know if I like Matip that much. Obviously, Van Dijk is a gigantic improvement from both of those center backs. So having Van Dijk out, like, it already is not looking good for Liverpool. And just one quick thing I want to mention is that Van Dijk's played every single minute in 74 straight games for Liverpool, which is like every single game since he's signed from Southampton. So, like, I don't know, just right now it does not look good for Liverpool at all.
Yeah, I was reading a stat the other day in terms of Van Dijk with and without the club. When Van Dijk does play, they have a 70% win percentage, 70%, versus when he's not. They have a, I believe it's 46, just under 50. So, you know, it's a dramatic difference when Van Dijk's not on the field. And that's because he's, you know, he's also a goal scorer too. He has the second most goals amongst defenders. So he does it on both ends of the pitch. And he's just a leader overall for a young you know, back line with Trent and Robertson. So, you know, my problem with Van Dijk being out is the lack of depth that they have in the center back position, because they have Joel Matip, like you mentioned, and also Joe Gomez. But beyond that, you don't have anyone else. And the problem is you're going to be playing in Europe. You're going to be playing, you know, cup ties. You're going to be playing league ties. So it's going to be a lot of football. So you're going to need depth. And I think eventually, you know, due to, you know, the lack of fitness amongst the center back partners with Joel and Matip, Joel Matip and Joe Gomez, they're going to get tired. So we're going to see Fabinho probably, you know, slot in the back, because he's done it before. But yeah, it's going to be hard times for the back line of Liverpool. And I was reading reports as well that Dayot Upamecano, the Frenchman from Leipzig, was a target. And Jamie Carragher came out and said, Liverpool, you have to sign this guy in January, because you guys are in desperate need of another center half. And it's true.
I saw that as well, because Dayot Upamecano, obviously he proved himself in Champions League for Leipzig this year. He was a very integral part of that team, and he was such a good defender in Europe. And even in the German League, he's a fantastic defender. He's young, and he would be a great signing for, I think, most teams.
For sure.
But right now, it's not looking like a lot of teams want to put the money out for him, because he is very expensive, obviously being young, a fantastic center back. But I think teams do really need it, especially Liverpool right now.
Yeah, and in that Merseyside derby, we saw Keane and Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin saw the back of the net again in that game. He scored for Everton once again. And, you know, Richarlison saw red in that game. It was a very gritty game. We saw that there were some hard tackles. And even at the end of the game, there's another controversial call. We're going to transition into our VAR segment where we review, you know, the football fails and the missed calls in the Premier League, or the funny moments in the Premier League. And this week we've selected the 93rd minute VAR review check and non-call of the goal. And that's Merseyside derby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. So what happened was there was a Henderson goal that was ruled out because they went to VAR and they saw that Mane was offside. For me, this is very, very, very controversial. They showed on screen what Vieira was looking at, and they drew the lines. Obviously, they drew the offside line, and then they drew the point, the farthest point that Mane was up the field. And it showed that, like, basically, like, I cannot, like, an inch of his elbow was offside.
I think even less. I don't for me, for when I saw that replay and that review of that attack that Mane ended up scoring, I don't know. For me, I just thought that he was onside. To me, it looked like he kept in line and he was behind that, the GFX, the graphic line that they provide for viewers. And yeah, I just thought it should have been a 3-2 win for Liverpool. It's just a very controversial call. There's always going to be controversy, you know, when VAR is involved. But just from my perspective and what I saw, I think it should have been warranted a goal for sure. And Liverpool should have won that match.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think like for you think that it was completely onside. I do think like the way that it showed it looked like literally like the tip of his elbow was offside. For me, that's not that in the rule book. Like if any part of your body's offside, it is considered offside. But like for me, that doesn't warrant an offside call. If your arm is flailing, I can't say that word, flailing, and like your elbow or like your hand is offside, like it's just not right for me. It's way too questionable for it to be a very deciding moment, 93rd minute in a Merseyside derby. Like it's just, I don't know. For me, that was just not a very good call from VAR.
Like I mentioned before, just overall tough call for Liverpool to draw points against Everton. You know, the Toffees are, you know, the biggest rival. Mm-hmm. Merseyside derby is always a coveted match. So just overall great game, gritty game. And just overall, to sum it up, it's just very sad to see a player like Van Dijk be out for the time that he's going to be out. Okay, we're going to kick it off to the best Premier League moments. You know, throughout the course of the Premier League since it's existed, there's been crazy goals scored, crazy moments overall. And we're just going to go through some of them that we feel that warrant to be talked about because there's some truly sensational moments that have happened throughout the course of the Premier League. So we'll get right into it here. I'll start off with the Rooney bicycle kick. I'm not even a Manchester United fan, but this goal is absolutely insane. The ball came in from the right side of the pitch. Rooney just, you know, no one expected him to just like hit the bicycle in that moment. And to do it against Manchester City was truly special. And just to see, you know, the celebration, all his teammates jumping on him was just a crazy moment and one of the best goals I've ever seen by far in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next one I want to talk about. I know I'm a United fan, so this kind of hurts for me a little bit.
Aguero!
Yeah, like Andrew says, definitely the Aguero goal against QPR. It's probably one of the most iconic moments in the Prem because what had happened was Manchester United had already won their game and they were sitting 2 points above Manchester City in the last game of the year. And Manchester City had to win the game in order for them to win the title. So Aguero ended up scoring in like what was like the 96th minute in like unbelievable fashion. So for me, this has got to be one of the best Prem moments ever.
Shout out my boy CR7, Cristiano Ronaldo, the best to ever do it. One of the craziest goals I've ever seen was his free kick against Portsmouth. That's when they were in the first division. They're in the third division now, I believe, or in the second. No, third. And it was just an amazing free kick. One of the best I've ever seen. Roberto Carlos, like, he striked the ball just with the absolutely best he could. And the ball swerved to the right. And it was a crazy, crazy free kick. So one of the best goals I've ever seen.
Yep. The next one is the Arsenal team goal against Norwich, which for most of you Premier League fans, you do know they started basically in their own side of half. And it was just a phenomenal team goal. It was passing all around, long balls, switching the ball. It was quick passes, runs off the ball. And I believe there was a back heel flick on to Wilshere, and Wilshere ended up tapping the ball into the back of net. And it was just a fantastic goal from a team perspective.
Yeah, that was by far the best ever team goal I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I was watching that game live, and I even watched it multiple times after. And I found it so satisfying just to rewatch that goal over and over and over again because of the touches that were made in the short time span and just how they made a mockery of that Norwich defense. And, you know, Norwich is not the best team, but still to do that in a game was just absolutely insane. So crazy goal there from the Arsenal side. Daniel, I know you were talking to me about this. This is not exactly a Premier League moment, but it led to, you know, Watford being promoted. Talk about the Deeney goal in that Watford-Leicester fixture several years back.
So for me, this is, I don't know if this can be considered a Prem moment, like Andrew said. It definitely had to do with the Prem because for me, this is my favorite ever moment from, I guess we're going to say Premier League. So what happened in the EFL Championship, they have the first team automatically gets promoted, and then the second, third, fourth, and fifth battle it out to see the two other teams, or the it's a one of the team that gets promoted.
It is one goes directly.
And then two advance.
And two go directly, sorry, one champion, yeah, okay, the so second first, place. And then three to six battle it out in a semifinal, then final matchup.
So what had happened was this was in the semifinals of that playoff. And again, for most of you that know and watch a lot of Prem or watch a lot of soccer moments, this was one of the best, because what had happened is that Leicester had a penalty shot to win the game in the 93rd minute. The keeper saved the penalty and then saved the rebound after the penalty.
Yeah, that was Anthony Knockert. I might be butchering his name. The Frenchman from he plays for Leeds now, or not for Leeds, for Fulham. No, sorry, Fulham.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great save on the penalty, and then Watford came sprinting all the way down the field on a counterattack right after the penalty, and Hogg headed the ball back down to Deeney, and Deeney smashed it into the back of the net, and the whole stadium absolutely erupted. There was fans on the field. Deeney went into the stands. Everyone was going absolutely nuts.
Yeah, the scenes were mad.
It was just absolutely incredible. So for me, that's got to be like one of my favorite, if you can call it, Premier League moments.
Now, we'll definitely give that one a pass. It's just like watching that sequence is like the ultimate. If you don't score on one end, they're going to punish you on the other. And that's what happened. And it ended up being like one of the worst, you know, punishments, because Leicester no longer went up didn't go up that year. And Watford was promoted instead. And it's just like one of those beautiful football moments. And you see the passion in the players, the passion in the fans after they ran on the field, and just how much it means to be in the best league in the world, to get promoted to the Premier League. So just overall, a great football moment and an iconic moment for Watford, for sure. So I'm going to go over to David Seaman, the goalkeeping legend for Arsenal. One of the best saves I've ever seen. You know, unfortunately, didn't get to see it live. It would have been absolutely insane to see it live. David Seaman, there was a header that came in. He just dived back. He was going backwards, and he pushed the ball from going in. And it was just one of those crazy reflex saves, and one of the best I've ever seen. And this was from David Seaman.
Mm-hmm. Well, sticking on the topic of just fantastic saves, I got the Czech save up against Liverpool when Andy Carroll late in the game had a header like basically two or three yards off the goal line, and he thought he had a wide open net, and Czech came sprawling across the net and pushed it upwards, and it landed on the cross. It hit the crossbar and landed right on the line, and then it was cleared by one of the defenders. And it was a fantastic save, and it came really late in the. I believe it was a cup game. It was a knockout of the cup game. So it was a great save. Fantastic to see.
Yeah, you think of other goals that have happened too. Cisse against Chelsea, the Trivella goal that he scored on Peter Cech. And then you think of other goals like from Dimitar Berbatov, the Manchester United legend, where he did some keep-ups, hit it up with his knee, and then he smashed in a bicycle kick goal. So you look through the course of the Premier League, and there's amazing, amazing goals. Andrew Townsend with one against Manchester City, just a screamer, side-footed that. Just a barrage of amazing goals. So that's for me, what always draws my attention to the Premier League is just the amazing goals that are scored. And sometimes it's from players you would never expect. And that's the beauty of football, and that's the beauty of the Premier League.
I completely agree that there's obviously been a lot of fantastic things. One thing quickly before we move on, I know I said my favorite moment has to be Watford versus Leicester. What's your favorite moment, Andrew?
It's not necessarily Premier League. It's not Premier League. It's abroad. It was the Drogba header late in the match against Bayern Munich in the Champions League final in Munich Arena. I actually recently got Drogba's jersey, the same jersey from that match. I had to get it. I saw it at a vintage soccer store, and I bought it because you know I hold that moment so close to me as an admirer of the Chelsea Football Club. And it was just an amazing goal and an amazing comeback from Chelsea, and one of the biggest late minute goals in Champions League history. And Drogba just absolutely smashed that goal with his head, top ins, and You know, Manuel Neuer got a hand on it. I remember seeing it live, and Manuel Neuer got a hand on it, and he still couldn't stop it just because of the power and the pace that Drogba got on that header. And, you know, Chelsea ended up winning that in penalties. So it's just a crazy, crazy moment, not necessarily Premier League, but from a Premier League club. Just keeping it going with the retro aspect and, you know, the vintage aspect of the Premier League, we're going to go into, you know, a favorite legend. Who do you see as the favorite legend for yourself personally?
Personally, my favorite legend, of course, being a Manchester United fan, has got to be Wayne Rooney. Like we just finished talking about, he scored such fantastic goals, like the bicycle kick against City. He was such an integral part of this Manchester United team over the years. Obviously, he did leave. He went to Everton for a little bit. Then he went to the MLS for a little bit.
Now he's playing for Derby County. Yeah.
Derby County as a manager player, which is kind of cool to see. But yeah, for me, he has to be one of my my favorite legends of all time from the Premier League.
I already mentioned mine. It's Didier Drogba, but has to be my favorite player of all time in the Premier League. Played for Chelsea, Ivory Coast International. Was just an amazing, amazing number nine. You know, they're very hard to come by of his class. And he was just so potent in front of goal. He couldn't be stopped. He was so physical, so technical. Let me just read out some of his stats here. He had 254 Premier League appearances. In that, he had 104 goals. That is an amazing record there. He had 54 assists. He won the Golden Boot 2 times. He's been a Premier League champion on 4 occasions, 04, 05, 09, 04, 15 season. His win record is just absolutely mad too. 172 wins in the Premier League to only 30 losses. You know, he had 0.41 goals per game. Just overall, like class player, a class striker. And he's just a great individual overall. A very nice guy off the field too. You could see in the work that he's done for FIFA. Just a great guy. And for me, he has to be the best Premier League striker in the modern era of the Premier League. So just a great class striker.
So we're just going to move on to the closing. So there was a couple of Champions League, some action today, and there was a little bit of action yesterday. So yesterday there was Chelsea versus Sevilla, which ended in
a nil-nil
draw. And then there was Manchester United. I know we discussed this quickly, Manchester United versus PSG game that happened yesterday as well. And that game ended 2-1 for United. Obviously a fantastic win for United. I got to love it. And then today we got City versus Porto, which is going to be a great game. And
City's going to destroy Porto. They're going to destroy them.
That's coming from the Benfica fan. He has to say that Porto's going to lose. And then we have Ajax versus Liverpool, which is going to be another fantastic game.
Yeah, and just to talk about Chelsea briefly, you know, we talked about their poor run of, you know, games lately. Tied 3-3 last time out against Southampton in the Prem. And then they go to Europe and they tie against, you know, Sevilla is a good team. But I think, you know, Chelsea, this is where they have to, you know, show their class and show that they're a good club and that they, you know, with the players that they brought in, they have to do some more damage. And to tie 0-0 against Sevilla, you know, they have to do better. And they're in a weaker group with Krasnodar. So they have to top their group and they have to, you know, they have to win games like this in convincing fashion. Sorry, that's just from a Chelsea fan, I expect more.
Yeah, so on top of the Champions League action, we got a couple of UEFA League games that involve some Prem teams. We have Rapid Vienna versus Arsenal. Tottenham versus LASK.
Another Austrian side.
Two Austrian sides against two Premier League teams. And then we have Leicester versus Zorya, which I...
Ukraine, they're from Ukraine, well. Guys.
So we have some very interesting Champions League matchups going on today and some... interesting UEFA League, Europa League.
Daniel, do you think Leicester can progress in the Europa League? Do you think they can, you know, do some damage?
You know what? I think they definitely can, being that they're going to be a top side from the Prem. Over the last, I think like it is like 5 or 6 years, there's been winners have been literally Manchester United has won once.
Chelsea won before Hazard departed, yep.
Yeah, Chelsea won once, and then the rest of it's been Sevilla. And now with Sevilla and Manchester United and Chelsea all being in Champions League, that leaves the door open for someone else. Obviously, they could still get relegated from a Champions League into Europa League if they finish third in the group. But right now, it looks like Manchester United, Sevilla, and Chelsea all have a very good chance of moving on to the knockout round.
Yeah, like Leicester's got Athens, Braga, and Zorya in the group. So like they should they should easily top a group like that. And then, you know, Tottenham, they should easily top their group. They got Ludogorets, LASK, and Antwerp. So, you know, it should be convincing from the Premier League sides. They should absolutely dominate. And then, you know, Arsenal's group, Rapid Vienna, Mold, and Dundalk from Ireland. So there should be no problem for Arsenal and Tottenham and Leicester. And they should, you know, we'll probably see a lot of younger players get some minutes because, you know, obviously no disrespect to the competition, but they're not the best competitors going against them. So maybe some good minutes for some younger players to be integrated into the initial 11 to get some minutes there.
Yeah, no, it is going to be definitely very interesting because like you said, I love young talent. Young talent for me is fantastic. And you see young players, obviously, it's going to start off, they're going to be a little bit nervous because they're playing on one of the biggest stages in Europe, but it's going to be great to see them play and get out there, get some real minutes with their team and see if they can take that back to the Prem, where maybe they won't get as much playing time, but they'll know that the managers will know that they can be used off the bench.
That is all for this second episode of Premier Talk. Thank you guys for listening along with us. We'll see you guys next week. I'm your host, as always, Andrew Mello, and alongside with me is Daniel Barbrudel. We'll see you guys.
See you guys.
Peace.